Chapter 3 Rod was still buttoning the front of his white overalls as he reached the shaft head. Automatically, he read the sign above the entrance. Stay alert, stay alive. With your cooperation, this mine has worked 16 fatality-free days. We'll have to change the number again, Rod thought with grim humour. The Mary Ann was waiting. Into its heavily wired confines were crowded the first aid team and emergency squad. The Mary Ann was the small cage used for lowering and hoisting personnel. There were two much larger cages that could carry 120 men at one trip, while the Mary Ann could handle only 40. But that was sufficient for now. "Let's go," said Rod, as he stepped into the cage, and the onsetter slammed the steel roller doors closed. The bell rang once, twice, and the floor dropped away from under him as the Mary Ann started down. Rod's belly came up to press against his ribs. They went down in one long, continuous rush in the darkness, the cage jarring and racketing, the air changing in smell and taste, becoming chemical and processed, the heat building up rapidly. Rod stood hunched-shouldered, leaning against the metal screen of the cage. The headroom was a mere 6'3", and with his helmet on, Rod stood taller than that. "So today we get another butcher's bill," he thought angrily. He was always angry when the earth took its payment in mangled flesh and snapping bones. All the ingenuity of man and the experience gained in 60 years of deep mining on the Witwaters Rand were used in trying to keep the price in blood as low as possible. But when you go down into the ultra-deep levels, below 8,000 feet, and from those depths you remove 250,000 tons of rock each month, mining on an inclined sheet of reef that leaves a vast low-roofed chamber thousands of feet across, then you must pay. For the stress builds up in the rock as the focal points of pressure change, until the moment when it reaches breaking point and she bumps. That is when men die. Rod's knees flexed under him as the cage braked and then yo-yoed to a halt at the brightly lit station on 66 level. Here they must transship to the sub-main shaft. The door rattled up, and Rod left the cage, striding out down the main haulage the size of a railway tunnel. Concreted and whitewashed, brightly lit by the bulbs that lined the roof, it curved gently away. The emergency team followed Rod, not running, but walking with the suppressed nervous energy of men going into danger. Rod led them towards the sub-main shaft. There is a limit to the depth which you can sink a shaft into the earth and then equip it to carry men suspended on a steel cable in a tiny wire cage. The limit is about 7,000 feet. At this depth, you must start again. Blast out a new headgear chamber from the living rock, and below it you sink your new shaft, the sub-main. The sub-main Mary Ann was waiting for them, and Rod led them into it. They stood shoulder to shoulder, and the door rattled shut, and again the stomach-swooping rush down into darkness. Down, down, down. Rod switched on his headlamp. Now there were tiny motes in the air, air that had been sterilely clean before. Dust. One of the deadly enemies of the miner. Dust from the burst. As yet, the ventilation system had been unable to clear it. Endlessly, they fell in darkness, and now it was very hot. The humidity building up the faces about him, both black and white, they were shiny with sweat in the light of his headlamp. The dust was thicker now. Someone coughed. The brightly lit stations flashed past them. 76, 77, 78, down, down. The dust was a fine mist now. 85, 86, 87. No one had spoken since entering the cage. 93, 94, 95. The deceleration and stop. The door rattled up. They were 9,500 feet below the surface of the earth. "Come on," said Rod.